In 2011, John Braver created a new type of interactive haunt theater called Delusion. Now in its fifth production, his Crimson Queen is brought to life. I had the pleasure of speaking with John just before opening night this year, where we discussed this year's production, as well as the show's history and future. Among the screams of the audience and the sounds of the city of Los Angeles, I bring you this exclusive interview with the creator of Delusion, John Braver, and an appearance by his assistant director and creative supervisor, Victor Matthew. For more information about Delusion, be sure to check out enterdelusion.com. The adventure of Delusion began in 2011 with a show called Delusion. Was that always the intention of, like, Delusion becoming the brand, or did that just kind of happen by circumstance?
That one kind of happened by circumstance, I would say. I mean, the name, it's funny, the name Delusion, I'll give you a little bit of backstory on that one. I was driving to the show, and the show was actually called, it was Haunted Play was the name of the company, and I was driving down the 10, and I heard on, it was an NPR, somebody talking about, they mentioned the word Delusion. And at that time I was trying to think of another name because I really don't like the name Haunted Play for some reason. And then I was like, it hit me. I was like, this is perfect. And then at that point it was a sort of a branding thing. I was like, this is perfect for all the stories going forward, sort of an overall universe.
Excellent.
Name.
And the show is certainly, it's not just theater. It's not just a haunt. It's not even just an escape room. So how would you describe it? All of that or something completely different? I don't know. How would you describe the show?
I always describe it as interactive theater, interactive horror theater. And this year, actually, we've kind of delved into all those categories you've just talked about a little bit more. But it's, I like the idea of, I love plays and I love theater. I love the intimacy of it. And I love the one-on-ones, the one-on-one moments with the new, with the sort of the resurgence of interactive theater happening. But this one, I always describe it as an adventure and a journey that people go on. And I write it for those people who are looking for a story, looking to be involved in a story. So that's really what it is.
Speaking of story, each production has its own totally unique story. Each year it's different. So tell me a bit about this year's story.
Yeah, so His Crimson Queen. It's a love story. It really is. I love the idea of diving into this love triangle between this vampire, the first female vampire, falling in love with a human, running away from her vampire lord from a long time ago, and her old lord sort of chasing her down and finding her and capturing her. This is sort of the story about the children of this vampire woman who's I know that in vampire lore, vampires cannot have children, and I'm doing my own lore. I'm just doing my own thing on this one, and I'm saying this is the only woman who's sort of reclaimed her humanity and thus being able to bear children once again, being the only one who can actually do that. So the audience becomes those characters, the children, and she's been taken away. The husband has disappeared for a while, and so the children look for their parents once again, and they get clues that she's been taken by someone within an old dreadful manner. So that's the idea of sort of a rescue mission of your parents and finding out more about your lineage and your bloodline.
Was there any specific inspiration for this, or was it just kind of an idea that popped in the head?
Well, it's two things. One is the venue is always super important.
Sure.
Obviously, so when I see the venue, if it lends itself to one of the ideas that's in this black book I have of ideas, then I'll attach it to that.
So far in advance, do you know which venue you're going to have?
That's always the main issue. It's like the venue we get, we either don't get it. Like in 2015, we didn't have a show because we never had a venue. But this venue we got in late May.
Okay.
And we had to kind of rush to get this going. So I like the idea of doing a vampire story. I didn't want to do it in previous years just because it felt like vampires were a bit overdone.
Yeah, sure.
And now I feel that zombies have overtaken that.
Sure.
And now I'm like, let's dive into an old school Interview the Vampire, like Salem's Lot, like eerie, dreadful love story. So there's that, and also an artist named Wayne Barlow in the East Coast. He is an incredible illustrator and artist, and he designed the poster for this year of the Head on Fire. and it just fit with the story really well.
Excellent. Now, since each year does have a different story, are they connected in any way, shape, or form? Is there some big secret that we'll that we'll find out in the future of Delusion? Yeah.
Well, the answer is yes. There is a big secret.
Okay.
And unfortunately, can't talk about it right now.
Okay.
But I'm hoping to talk about it soon. But I will say that we are creating this sort of, like Marvel has a universe.
Mm-hmm.
So we're creating a Delusion universe that is connected to other stories, some very faintly, very subtly, others directly. And this story definitely has a connection, albeit a subtle one, a very, very subtle one. So yes, there's an overall Delusion universe that I'm starting to create in not only interactive theater, but we're moving into graphic novels, comics, theater. Television and film.
Were you thinking about that in 2011 as well? Or was that kind of something? No. Okay.
Yeah.
But you're trying to tie it back to 2011 show, like creating that universe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Very cool.
It's an evolving process.
Excellent. And so Delusion, although a lot of people might use the word haunted house, it's not. And it's certainly not really about gore at all. It's more kind of suspense, paranormal. So if you were to compare it to a movie, perhaps you already said Interview with the Vampire. Is that what you compare it to?
Well, this specific story?
Or just Delusion, like Delusion, the world of
general.
Delusion. If you were going to compare it to a movie.
Yeah. I would always say The Shining. And it's I used to call it like a mix between the slow, eerie pace of The Shining mixed with the frenetic action of Aliens from time to time. And so, you know, the things are coming at you from different angles. You know, we incorporate a lot of stunt work into this, a lot of wire gags. So people are flying at you and crawling up walls and ceilings and sliding down hallways and stuff like that. So a mix of those two things. The Shining, Aliens, you know, some of my favorite films of all time. So,
you mentioned the stunt work, and you have a background in stunt work for film, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And stunt work's been a big part of Delusion since the beginning, back in 2011. Is that something you always want to keep in there, or is it something that, like, you kind of feel like the audience has come to expect of you, and now you have to figure out a way to get that into the story?
It's funny. Well, I made a very, very strong point to not put stunts in as a showcase. It has to be show appropriate. It has to actually make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I do like doing it because obviously it's super fun to see all this stuff happen around you, but it has to make sense.
Yeah.
So yeah, we basically every year, like except for 2014 wasn't a big stunt heavy show. This one is more, but it lends itself because you have vampires.
Now, since 2011, I'd say interactive theater, escape rooms, all that stuff has become way more mainstream. Do you feel the pressure to, separate yourself from that? And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I remember 2011, 2012, there was nothing.
Yeah.
It was almost, I don't remember any of this stuff. And now there's some wonderful experiences out there. But I definitely feel like it's like with anybody who's creating something, it's like you want to sort of continuously one up yourself, I guess, and do something better every time. But now there's just a lot of competition out there. So I just hope people still continue to dig the format because I don't want to change it because people seem to really like it.
Yeah. Now, 2015, you did mention you had a hiatus. That was because you couldn't find a space?
Well, it was a personal thing. My mom passed away and we were very close. So that was a massive blow to me mixed with not being able to find a venue. So I needed time off personally, and I just sort of backed away and made a haunted house for my daughter.
Nice. Yeah. How did that turn out?
That was so much fun.
That must have been great.
It's so easy compared to this. It's so much fun.
I went
to Vermont and went hiking through the forest.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I'm actually going in a week.
And you obviously have a team that you trust tremendously for you to be able to leave during the run of the show. So how many of these people have been with you since the beginning? Any of them?
Yes, actually, Victor Matthew. He's an amazing, creative French guy, French soul that came into my life in 2011. So he's been with me since the beginning. And then a lot of them most of the rest of them started in 2012. Like Kevin, who's a lighting designer, and Kevin Williams came with us in 2014. He's a production designer. The team, they are unreal. That this could never possibly, everybody says it all the time, but this really could never happen without Kevin, Ian, Jackie, Naya, Victor, Paolo and Venus, and all of our main crew. I don't know how, I literally wake up, I'm like, I don't know how this is going to get done. I don't even think it's going to get done. I still don't understand how it works.
So you've mentioned the future of Delusion looks like comic books, TV, film. That's where you're heading.
Yeah.
But are there any little nuggets you can give us that, you know, beyond that, any info? Or what are the grand dream for Delusion for you, perhaps?
The grand dream. Well, I have a TV series that I'm started to outline, and based on the first 2 years of the show. And so that would be a dream come true. But as I said, I wish, like, there's something in the works right now that will be announced very soon, and I wish I could do it, but I contractually cannot. If you're going to come to the show, please be a kid and just let yourself go, jump into the adventure, and don't molest my actors.
How much does it screw up the show? Well, like, when people, obviously it messes it up a lot when people don't interact, but like, there was a room, the chalk, well, I don't want to give it away. There's a room that we took a while to figure out.
Right.
How many groups are in this house at once? Like, how close are we to screwing up the people show behind us?
Yeah, I know, and that's something to talk about, which is a great, it's sort of a big part of Delusion, is there are an ungodly amount of moving parts to this thing. At any one time, there's four plays going on.
Yeah, four in the house at a time.
Four in the house, okay. Yeah. And so you got to keep it moving. The actors know to keep things moving. But sometimes, like, for example, last night, one of our actors got locked in one of the rooms, couldn't get out.
Wow.
And they have to sort of improvise, and other actors jump in and make it work and pull people away. It just comes with the rehearsals and experience of just knowing this is screwed up. I know we're behind. I have to jump in and grab these people. And it could literally be just that, running in, grabbing people, come with me. And they don't know what's going on, but they wouldn't know otherwise, I guess.
But are there countdown clocks anywhere for, like, the actors that they know of? Like, hey, you got 1 minute to get these people out of this room.
Well, music is a big part of the show that I'd love to talk about more with people, because, like, the score is something we work very hard on, because it really does feel like you're in a horror movie. But the score is massive and epic, and everything's timed to it. We have scenes where actors have to go, like, crawl up a wall, and there's a certain whoosh sound in the music that they have to hit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's all timed. If they don't hit that, and they know they missed their cue. Actors know that there's certain hidden things within the score that okay, you have 30 seconds to finish the scene up, and you better get moving. So there's lots of little hidden things that the actors are going to...
Excellent.
Fine. So
I know you're busy.
Hey, there's Victor. So. You know, you want to talk to Victor Matthew. That's the other creative genius behind this.
You want to talk? So, I'll talk forever.
Get Victor Matthew here. This is Victor Matthew.
Victor Matthew.
Assistant director, creative supervisor. Yeah.
Since 2011.
Since 2011, since the creation of the show, yeah.
Okay. Well, it all starts in John's head, yes?
Correct.
Are you the second person to hear what's going on inside John's head?
Basically, I'd say I'm the second person to hear, as well as Kevin, our art department lead / production designer. I guess it's the three of us that begin. And so when John's writing the script, then I'll he'll bring me in. We'll sit down. And I'll give him some ideas. Basically all creative elements, whether it's the script, the music, the sound design. Finding music for the show, just character ideas, all kinds of gags, and even just character little, you know, twerks and concepts. We just, you know, work together on them and come up with some really cool stuff. And
How often does John tell you what he's thinking, and you go, John, what are you thinking? We can't do that.
I actually, John's ideas are always on point. They're always awesome. I just add to them, you know, or if I think, for me, because I run the show as well, and I'm in charge of timing, because every 15 minutes we start a new play. And so if things, you know, it's all great for a film to get really complicated and to do really cool things. But for this, we have logistically to have to keep the play moving and keep things on schedule. So things that make, you know, the schedule more complex and harder to determine whether, you know, we can, you know, get a play moving every 15 minutes. You know, if I see that in the script, then, I tell John, listen, like, let's simplify this so that we can, you know, keep the flow moving and stay on schedule. So you can basically, like, when John's writing the script, he's got a very good, sense. I mean, especially after 5 years of how, you know, to write it according to the way that the show works in terms of timing and flow. But I'm still there to kind of supervise that and make sure that we keep things moving, you know, based on the script.
It does seem like, I've done the show since 2011, and it does seem like each year there's more interactive elements for the audience is, I don't know, perhaps it's in my mind, but it does seem like that. And so, like, are you guys just trusting the audience more, or have you found that maybe they are playing along more than you expected them to initially?
You know, I think that the fan group for Delusion has grown over the years. Mm-hmm. And so originally acquiring people to come to Delusion, or get, you know, reaching out to people that have never seen the show, to walk in and just go for it, I basically had to follow each group with security and make sure that everything was under control. Whereas now, after 5 years, most people kind of know what Delusion is about. I think interactive theater has also grown, you know, as well, and people understand more what that means and what it entails. So yes, we do trust our audiences more now. And so therefore we do trust people to be more interactive. Whereas back then we were still interactive. It's always been an interactive show, but it was just more supervised, and we took less risks. And I think also it's not just a question of taking less risks, just a question of, we are taking bigger steps every year to make the show even more interactive, because we learn from what we've done in the past and we try to raise the bar as well.
Well, congratulations. I'm going to leave it there unless there's something you'd like to add.
I'll come to the show. Come see the show. It's awesome.
Excellent. Yeah. I would like to thank John and Victor for taking the time to speak with me, as well as Naya and Eliana for making this interview possible. I leave you now with the ever-important original score created for Delusion, as well as a sneak peek at this year's story. Happy haunting, everyone!
October 4th, 1933. Burke Sullivan. My dear children, I've lost time with you that I can never get back. I'm filled with regret over this, yet I'm writing to you now with renewed hope. I have news that will change all of our lives for the better. But to understand what I'm about to tell you, I must share with you the true story of your mother, Celine. She dreaded the day she would have to tell you, and by horrific happenstance, she never had to. Yet here it is, her journal, in her own words.
I've lived far too long. And if the day should come that I die, I must put my story to paper. I was not always as I am now. I was born in Prussia, or what you would now call Germany, in the year 1685. To ask why I've lived this long is like asking death to explain itself. Back then, I loved a man named Ambrose. He was my lord. But I was dying of disease. Well, he held me. Something took hold of him. I can't describe it, but it made us both what we are today. Monsters. He sunk his teeth into me and gave me his blood. I was whole again, but the dark blood ran cold in him. Night after night, we would hunt. This cursed life we shared was intoxicating to him. My compassion for human life remained, though. Over time, the blood became tasteless. The moon rose and fell, and I could no longer find purpose in my immortal life. Ambrose was lost to me. I knew he would never let me go. So I snuck away and moved to the new world in hopes of finding purpose. I wandered for years, until the fall of 1895, when I met your father, Burke. I took my chances and told him what I was, but he didn't care. We fell deep in love, and in time, what was once thought impossible became real. I was able to bear children. Seems the world evolves, but my kind does not. Yet, perhaps I have.
She goes on further, but we have little time. Her blood runs in your veins too, but thank God you don't suffer their weaknesses. Now I realize this may sound quite odd, and I can't fully explain it, but I believe Celine is here. I know she's alive. I met the man, Ambrose. He poses as an art collector and lives with a very strange family. When I mentioned Celine, you should have seen the look in his eyes. He stormed off. but I quietly followed. I dare not enter his villa without you.